the buzzer. They poured on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do. Florida wins.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, or Dockage and Greenberg, and we've had an insane week of college basketball because, as Dan Dockage would say, college basketball never disappoints. Every single night,
yep.
Even Iowa and Wisconsin. I mean, I was riveted to the television. I couldn't watch enough games going on that day, and there happened to be another little game going on that day, that Oklahoma-Kansas game, and you know, we praised Trae Young. He was the best thing that's ever been invented in the game of college basketball. Then he took 39 shots, and we all went, ugh, 39 shots, almost half your team shots. That's a lot of shots. Maybe we need to pull back on that a little bit, get everyone involved. And then all of a sudden, Trae Young, all he did was get 26 points on 9 shots, get everyone involved. Last two plays of the game, made plays for his teammates, made the right play. And Hakadok was successful, and Oklahoma got a win, big win. I know you were locked into your game, Squared, but I know that you are a basketball guru, and I'm sure you just went through that game thoroughly. What was your take on Oklahoma, Kansas?
My take was, number one, I don't think Kansas overwhelms, obviously, right? I mean, you know, when you're talking about a team going for its 14th straight and all that, conference title and all that, they don't overwhelm. You know, there's no Andrew Wiggins. That's one of them. Like, I did go back and rewatch it, and I thought to myself, okay, this is just a Kansas team. Second thing was, I really like when people learn, if that makes any sense at all.
Sure.
Like, yeah, I like. I did think, and we had a game in Iowa on Saturday, and then I watched a lot of the second half into overtime of Trae Young on Saturday, and I did think for the first time he became, you know, I call it a pig, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
selfish.
Ball hog, whatever you want to call it. It was the first time that I really saw him not make everybody else comfortable while he's doing his thing. And again, I go to the Kansas game, and you said it, 9 shots. I love, like, I always say this about great players, and I'm curious your thoughts, Seth. Great players never stay the same. Like, during the year, they don't stay the same. Their career don't stay the same. They add to it. They get smarter. They do better things. They do, you know, and that was growth for me. And I think other players should look at that and say, man, what can I do? Or coaches, what can I do to grow and get better? I thought it was great. I did. I thought it was absolutely great. But I don't think Kansas is that good.
See, I agree with you. So I've picked the field all year. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
You have.
All year because, look, Udoka Azubuike goes out of the game. Lightfoot's a nice player, but let's be honest. I mean, that team is so small. They have a hard time protecting the rim. They can't play out ahead of you. If they can't attack you off the bounce and space you and drive it and kick it and make shots, they struggle. They struggle, you know, defending, rebounding the ball on the defensive end. They struggle defending ball screens. I mean, last play of the game, 2 same-size screens. You know, Svi Mykhailiuk and Devontae Graham, they're supposed to switch. They both come together. Bam, Trae Young makes the right pass. Brady Maddox knocks down to 3. Kansas is really well coached. When they're up and into you and you're reacting to them defensively, they're better. They are a matchup problem if you have 2 bigs. But Trae Young, to me, you know, I acted like I was Lon Kruger. I'd never be a Lon Kruger because I'm not that smart. He's a much smarter coach. He's got a gazillion more wins and everything else. He was a better player. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of better things. He's got a bigger bank account. But I acted like I was basically Lon Kruger before the game on SportsCenter. I said, look, all right, here's this play. It's a 50-50 ball. You see, you're ahead of the Oklahoma State player. He's got to go down to the floor. Trae, we need more out of you here. And, you know, right here, Trae, you're at the end of the game. There's 2 minutes and 2 seconds left. We're down 2. You're going 1-on-4. All right, you got to make better decisions. You got to be inclusive with your team. Anyway, I went through those plays. The thing is, not everyone would accept that. And I'm not sure he can be that guy every single game because there might be certain games he might need to be more assertive. But in that moment in time, he got his team on his back cover and had his back because he included them. And when you include the others, they defend harder, they screen harder, they run the floor harder. And I thought it was just I thought it was a phenomenal game, great game plan, and Lon Kruger with the hack-a-doke. I mean, it was terrific. I mean, and the whole hack-a-doke thing. I mean, let me ask you this. You got a guy like that, you're up 10, you leave him in the game, you don't leave, you take him out, you know you're going to need him later down the line, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So are you worried about his confidence? You say, like, big fella, like, hey, we want our best free throw shooters in the game at this time, and you helped us get to this point, but let's go finish this thing out. What do you say to your
I mind? Always worried about my confidence, truthfully. I mean, I was always like, hey, you know, that's why I'm probably not coaching, but I always worried about, like, you know, for the players other than him, we need to win this game. What's the best way to win this game? And I always felt like you could handle whatever you needed to handle after the game, but we need to win this one. So in that situation, I don't think it would have been any issue to take him out. But, you know, Seth, here's the thing, and this is fascinating to me. I've said this forever. Everything from the NBA trickles down to college basketball, from guys putting towels on their legs and over their head on the bench to hack-a-doke. You know what I mean? Everything does. So what I'm also doing is, if I'm a coach and I'm going to play Kansas, hey, that's in my thinking.
No doubt.
Isn't it?
No doubt. Oh, no doubt.
I saw it last night, Seth. Rutgers and Nebraska, end of the game. I think it was a two-point game. I can't remember the big kid's name for Rutgers, but he's 8 for 30 on the year, right? And so he gets it underneath, and they just foul him. And I don't know whether they did it intentionally or not. It was late in the game, maybe 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, whatever it was. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that's basically what Oklahoma did, but for a stretch. You know what I mean?
Yep, yeah.
And it's a smart move. It really is. Again, NBA thing. The other NBA thing that we're seeing a little bit more and more of, Seth, is we are seeing a little bit of fouling in the open court, making guy take it out instead of going down 3-on-1.
That's the big European thing.
Yes. Yes.
You coach over in Europe, like I did that stuff this summer. It's hilarious. I mean, they're good at it. They're like body chest you and run you off the line. I mean, it's not exactly a pure hack, but, you know, look, if you got fouls to give and you don't mind it and you got a deep enough bench, you know, look, it's hard to score against a set defense. So if you can set your defense, and then if you got a guy that's a really bad free throw shooter, look, it's a possession game. It was 2 minutes left in the game, and you know, Lon Kruger, a little bit of NBA background, and I thought it was good strategy, and I love that Bill self owned it. I absolutely love that Bill self owned it. Like, you know, he said, you know what, in retrospect, you know, probably was a bad decision. But how about the craziest thing? Someone went over to the Kansas dorm, the basketball dorm, trying to give free throw lessons, and they had have him escorted out by police. I mean, you imagine that. Some guy just off the street knocks on the door like, hey, excuse me, I'm here to correct Yudoki's free throw.
Hey, that's passion, I guess.
And the dude was arrested.
Yeah, well, he should be. I mean, look, I had guys send me one time in college, what do you call them, bullet shells. And I had the cops involved. I don't know if he wanted to kill me. I don't know if he was trying to tell. He had some stuff line like aiming or something. I don't know. But I can't remember. But it was math formulas and bullet casings. I'm like, oh, man. Does this guy want to kill me?
Were you more comfortable with the bullet casings or the math questions?
Yeah. I was like, man, if you make me do that math, then just shoot me. Because I got no chance.
All right, Kentucky.
Yeah,
they bounced back. They won a home against Mississippi State. Obviously, last week, rough week. Kind of, I think, gave one away against South Carolina. South Carolina turns around, has a huge win at Florida. That team's getting better, and Silva's playing like a beast. Then they lose to Florida in a game that they played pretty well in the first half, lost their way, turned it over some, which they do anyway. Got outworked a little bit by Igor Kulichev on the glass, but, I mean, they did some good things. Where do you think Kentucky's at right now?
Average. You know, got a chance to get better. Average, though. I watched them play, and they're average on talent. I mean, they're good. They're going to have, one guy maybe in the lottery, which is average talent to below or talent for Kentucky. I'm not saying anybody else. So you got that average. You got skill level average. Attention to detail average.
Maybe below.
Yeah. I just think, you know, good enough because they got talent, well coached. I mean, let's face it, John Calipari has always done well with whatever team you want to throw at him. Doesn't matter. But average. I mean, just, you know, nothing about them. I've been watching them, and there's nothing about them that draws you to them. Like, if I was a Kentucky
fan. What's their identity?
Yeah. But even that, Seth, even the most insane Kentucky fan, like, you know, and they're the best, right? They're ready to rock and roll over anything. I don't know how you get attached to this particular team. Does that make sense?
Well, you better, because a lot of them are going to be back next year.
I know.
I mean, so you better be really attached to them. I think next year this team, if it grows up,
yeah,
could be
yeah
pretty phenomenal. I mean, it could be really, really special. Like, if Wenyen Graber comes back, which and Sasha Clay Jones, who should come back unless he, you know, maybe he leaves or something, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander comes back, and Jared Vanderbilt, who should, you know, a healthy Jared Vanderbilt come back, because he's got areas where he's got to improve, and Richards should come back. I mean, Diallo really should come back. He probably won't.
No, he won't, but he should.
He should. I mean, they could have the makings of quote unquote a veteran team for Kentucky. I do think here's a dilemma for John, in my opinion. Like, he's got to coach them hard, but they know they're not that good. So there's, you know, like, what they thought was easy is hard. So I think in a lot of ways they're a little bit fragile. So, you know, look, he recruited them. They're his guys. In a lot of ways, I had an assistant coach who used to tell me, Coach, you got to love your players. You got to coach them, but you've got to love them in a way to help them move forward. And it will be interesting to see what happens in Morgantown. Here's the deal. They can defend well enough and then finish the possession with a rebound. Then they have a chance to win that game, because West Virginia can get stuck. Their best offense, obviously, besides the turnover, is the second shot. If they can rebound the ball, which is a big if, because West Virginia, when they do not shoot 45%, they really struggle.
You guys, let me talk about West Virginia just, you know, for a moment. You guys like West Virginia's defense a whole lot more than I do.
I don't like it on a miss.
I don't like it ever. They get beaten on drives. There was always a thing with Purdue. They would get in this great stance and everybody would go great defense, but if you drove them right at them, they couldn't guard you. And I don't see West Virginia. Again, I haven't watched every game, but I've watched enough to know that that's the most overrated defensive team by us. Press Virginia. I'm going to do this. Always out of position. You can drive right at them. If you move the ball side to side, you get into the lane. I mean, I guess they beat bad teams, but that's what pressing teams do. Pressing teams whip bad teams. When I see them against decent teams, it's just one out of position.
Here's my thing. I think their style of play and what they do, and if they're making shots, all right, then all of a sudden they are more energized on the defensive end, and they can be what I call disruptive, like the trapping ball screens, trapping dribble handoffs. They're getting you to react to them. If they're not making shots, then you move the ball, you move people easier, you get those straight line drives, you can get it side to side.
And I think you all are in so in love. Let me tell you, I think you all are so in love with Huggins, it's sickening. I think you like, every time I turn on the TV, you guys are talking about Huggins, and I'm like, really? Okay, great. But
no, we talk about Trae Young every time.
No,
you turn on the TV.
Well, we do.
I mean, you're right. See, that you're totally wrong on that.
Right.
I mean, you know, way off base on that one. I mean,
no, you're right. Hey, I
Huggins,
do too.
Huggs is kind of, you know, he's a cartoon character. He's gonna have. Look, he's got 800 wins. He's coached. He's not a blue blood.
He's great.
I mean,
but
West Virginia, Cincinnati, Kansas State, Akron.
Yeah, all good
Walsh
programs.
I mean, you know, not like North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky. I mean,
yeah, I get it. I'm a big fan. Don't get me wrong, but I couldn't wait to watch West Virginia's vaunted defense.
Who do you have, West Virginia, Kentucky?
I can get 7 in that game. Where is it at?
It's at West Virginia, man. Come on.
It's at West Virginia. I'll take West Virginia because let me back up a second. Okay.
You can back up for 2 seconds.
Okay. I want to go to the psychology of college basketball. Okay. Let's go this route. This time of year, you and I were talking about, Eric, people hate each other, but also people come together or they go away. And I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to give you 2 examples. One is going to answer the question about West Virginia. Florida, big win against Kentucky. They couldn't handle it.
Oh, sure. That happens all the time.
All the time. And people always ask me, what's the best thing Bob Knight ever did as a coach? And I say, he never let you get comfortable. Like you beat somebody and you're like, I don't care. I never heard of a 24-hour rule. Like, we never have a 24-hour rule. It's like, by the time you leave this locker room, your head better be on Purdue. I know you just beat Ohio State, but your head better be on Purdue. Or don't come back tomorrow. I mean, that kind of stuff. So they couldn't handle it. Now, here's where I go to. I go to this. One team, West Virginia, lost, gave up 80,000 points. The other team, Kentucky, won. Now, this time of year, teams go away. Like I have a theory that sometimes people splat. They don't always bounce back. And is West Virginia going to be angry and bounce back? Is Kentucky now rolling because of a couple a win?
Not one when they were. They're 1-2 their last three.
I know, but their last one, their young team, maybe they feel good.
They looked happy.
They did. So I think it's a psyche game. I think West Virginia will beat them by double digits in the end because I think West Virginia will be angry, and I think Kentucky is just not that good.
All right, I take that. I'm going to give you my philosophy on why everyone's miserable.
This time of year,
we're getting to February. All right, and you're like, you've driven 8,000 miles all over the Big Ten, so you're probably miserable too. So here's the deal. The officials now are in February. They've done about 70 games right now, maybe 60. They're reffing every single night. All right, they're reffing until 11 o'clock, taking the first flight out the next morning, getting to the next city, taking a nap, stretching, but they're exhausted. And you know what happens when you get tired? You get cranky.
Yes.
You get cranky. Even you. I've known you to get cranky when you're tired, right? So you got cranky officials. All right. Then, you got the coaches. It's February. It's grind time. Are we in? Are we out? Are we on the bubble? Is it a must win? Am I in a hot seat? I got three freshmen that aren't playing as much. The parents are driving me crazy. This guy wants more shots. Workout gurus, angry, tired, exhausted, overworked, recruiting in the middle of the season. They're tired. What are they?
Cranky.
Cranky. You got players. All right. Players have listened to their coaches since the summer. All right. Because you're working out in the summer. And then now the coaches are still on them a little bit harder because, they're not paying attention to scout report. They're not watching film. They're not coming in and getting extra shots. They're not coming to a jump stop. I have a way to tell you, we're working on a jump stop, pump fake, shot fake all season. They're tired of hearing that voice. They can hear the voice in their sleep. What are they? Cranky. So this is the cranky time of the year. So, if you don't have a good locker room this time of the year, all right, so officials are cranky. Coaches are cranky. Coaches are tired of the officials. The officials are tired of the coaches. The players are tired of the coaches. The coaches are tired of the players. This is a very stressful time of the year. Do you agree or not agree with that hypothesis?
Oh, I don't disagree, but I think it goes the other way, too. I think smart coaches, it's a fun time of the year because they limit everything. Seth, let me give you an example. I have been on probably three flights in the last four flights with officials. And, we get talking. And I ask them where they're going. And, man, these dudes are every night. And they're on flights with me, which means I got to get back here by, 10 o'clock so I can do my radio show at noon. So I'm on the earliest one there is out of whatever city, and they're on it.
Yep.
And then they got to, hey, where are you going tomorrow? Well, I'm driving down to Bloomington, and I'm doing the game last night. I'm like, really? Oh, man. There are a lot of things. You do that once? Cool. You do that five times a week? You're cranky. And not only are you cranky, you're not as good. You're just not, and you're more susceptible to injury. And that goes for players as well. The smart coaches right now, I always used to say, again, we're going to practice 20 minutes and we're going to get out of here. Now, just give me 20, 30 minutes, your best effort, and we'll get out of here. Now, if you don't, then I got to go longer, but let's go this time of year. And you can get into a great routine this time of year, or you can get into scramble mode, and I'm sure you've been in both, and I've been in both. And you're right, when you're not – and let's be honest, I don't care what it is, winning is the great elixir. Like, you win, nobody's cranky.
Back cranky.
The backup point guard's cranky because he didn't get 20 minutes a game. And you're right, the workout guru is in his ear saying, oh, man. But no, you're right. Cranky is the buzzword for about the next 3 weeks, and then it gets into excitement for the tournament.
Yeah, and when officials get cranky, you know what they give more of? Technicals.
I thought last night, for whatever reason, all right, I thought in the Indiana game against Illinois, now I watch it because I got to talk about it today, and that would be the only reason I watched it, because it was an incredible foul. Like, Seth, do you think officials call more fouls at this time of year?
Yeah, I do, because I think that here's the one thing. The other thing is they're being evaluated, and they want to make sure that now they're staying with the rules of the game and officiating the game the way the supervisors and JC wants to see it officiated, because they want to make the tournament, and then they want to advance in the tournament. So, yeah, I'm sure that they're trying to call it in a similar way that they called it in November, because they know more eyes are on them, because let's face it, Super Bowl's next week. Then all of a sudden, where do all the eyes come? People said, I got to figure out, my bracket. There are more eyes on games every single week now, because you got through the National Football Championship. Now you're going to be through the Super Bowl. So all eyes, basically, NBA All-Star Week's over. The only thing that stops eyes from being on our game is NBA guys going into someone else's locker room, NBA guys complaining about officials because they're obviously cranky also. LeBron James and the Cavs not being able to give up less than 130 points. Besides that, I mean, pretty much all eyes are going to be on college basketball. But you know whose team isn't cranky?
Who?
Tony Bennett's team is not cranky.
No.
I mean, like, that team
they crank it up.
I mean, you know what they do? They get a good shot. You don't get a good shot. They don't turn it over. You turn it over. You throw it to the post. They get it out of the post because they double it. But they stay between the ball and the basket, and then they block you out so you can't basically get to the offensive glass. And because they don't turn it over, you don't run on them. So I would think that would be a pretty happy team. And they got seniors.
They've got seniors. That is like the sweetest sound to a coach this time of year, because let's face it, you're going to play tough road games, right? I mean, look, you go to ACC, you go to Virginia if you're North Carolina. You go to North Carolina if you're Virginia. You're in the ACC, you're in the Big East, you're in the Big Ten. It doesn't matter. And seniors, man, they know everything. It's not they not only play great on the court, they not only handle the expectations of the year, but they make damn sure, if they care, that things are flowing smoothly in travel, in school, in social. I don't hear about your girlfriend, man. Put that. I'll never forget. I mean, adult seniors, hey, man, put the girlfriend stuff behind to the team. Hey, we're putting all this behind. So, Seth, I am with you, man. I mean, and again, we're going to say it every week because it's so true. Let's go through the top three teams in the country: Villanova, Virginia.
And you know what? When we come back, we're going to talk to Virginia head coach Tony Bennett. How about that?
Yeah.
We'll get to Coach Bennett in a minute, but first, a word from our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. A fresh new year has begun, and if you're setting new goals for your business, it's extremely difficult to reach them without the right people on your team. And ZipRecruiter has transformed how you go about finding them. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. They even review every application to identify the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employees who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidates through the site just in one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. One more time. Try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. We'd like to welcome in Virginia head coach Tony Bennett. Tony, thanks for being with us. Your team this year, I don't care what anyone says, I love the way your team plays, because last time I checked, if you get a good shot and your opponent doesn't get a good shot, and you don't turn it over and they turn it over, and you stop them from getting to the glass and you take them out of transition, that's usually a good thing. So first of all, congratulations on your success. But does this team surprise you a little bit?
Thanks for that. You know, I didn't know what to expect to start the season because we didn't have any double-digit scores returning, and we really didn't have a lot of experience in terms of that. But our experienced guys, our captains, were guys that were great. I don't know if you want to use the word role players, but they, you know, were red shirts and kind of held their spots and their defensive-minded guys, and they've just kind of forged the identity of our team. And, you know, what you said, that has to be our way. It's our way, and it's the way we think we can compete the best against the talent in our conference and in the country. So I guess the short answer is I'm very thankful, and I guess, yeah, a little bit surprised where we're at. But I also know there's a lot of basketball left, and we'll keep growing and learning as this season progresses, and there's some good teams left on the schedule.
Tony, your five pillars of what your program's built on, and, you know, you're playing against a team now in Duke, obviously, that is loaded with one-and-dones and lottery picks, but how important is it when you guys go recruit to understand guys that are going to buy into the humility and the passion and the unity and the servanthood and the thank? I mean, like, how important is that as part of your recruiting process? Because it seems to me, you're putting guys in the NBA. I'm not, you know, I went through the list the other day, whether it's Justin or whether it's London, whether it's Malcolm or whether it's Joe. I mean, you know, you guys have had it, but you have guys that totally, when I watch your team, everyone is pulling in the same direction, which is fun to watch. I mean, how important is it using those five pillars to recruit to, I guess?
I think it's huge for us. And I think every coach has their core values, what are important, and they all try to, you know, recruit to those. So it's not like we have something that is that unique, but those are important because, you know, the way we're trying to get things done, you have to have guys that perhaps are going to be in college for 4 years. And as they mature and grow, as I've watched it play out on staffs I've been a part of at Wisconsin and Washington State, you got to get guys to, you know, grow to be junior seniors and have experience to be successful. But yeah, those pillars are something that were established a long time ago by my dad, and just are sound ways for us to go about it. So the character piece, you hear that all the time. You can't take a shortcut on character. And then, you know, whatever you coach and teach, you're going to have difficulties, but you know that if you got guys that can go through adversity. I always remember my dad, he said, I need to have guys I can lose with first before I win, because if I know they'll stay together, we're going to learn from our adversity and losses and then become wiser and better. And, you know, you got to find a way that works for you in your system and your team to be successful.
Hey, speaking of that, I think cutting Kyle Guy's man bun has been huge for your team. Your thoughts on that?
It's the reverse Samson. I agree. I like it. I'm a big fan. I know his mom is too. And, you know, it's kind of like sometimes you got to let young men go through their things, and then it's like your kids. Okay, good. Here we are. If you force it too soon, it might not happen as fast as you want. So the timing has been good. Reverse Samson, right?
Yeah. I love it.
He'll use that now.
But I would like to talk to you about Isaiah Wilkins, man. I remember doing a game a few years ago, and he was okay. I mean, he was good. He was fine. But I'm not so sure he's not the best or the most versatile defensive player in the country, and he makes shots. I mean, if you don't mind talking about his development, he's been terrific, I see.
He was so well coached out of high school. He actually played for Malcolm Brogdon's high school coach, Coach Martin, who's just terrific. It was at the time at Greater Atlanta Christian High School. But Isaiah came in that way. He's one of the best. I remember trying to go through the list of great team defenders. My dad coached a guy named Mike Kelly at Wisconsin and a guy named Gary Gresh at Green Bay. We had Akil Mitchell. Malcolm was a good individual defender, but Isaiah, you know, great defenders are, first, they're continuous. They have a heart and mind for defense, but they have great anticipation. And that's Isaiah. His ability, whether it's keeping a ball alive on the offensive glass or just looking around, I got to help here. I got to take a charge. I got to show on a ball screen, get back. He's always helping everyone else, and it's just in his DNA. And that's, like, you can't stat that, but it's unique how continuous he is and his anticipation. It's just it's really good, and he thrives on it. That's, again, we talk about our pillar of humility, knowing who you are, your identity. That's who he is. He understands himself clearly, and he's evolved. Dan, every year he's gotten a little better with his shot, better with his offense, and a little stronger. So I think that stuff is really been a catalyst to our success this year. And now he's, you know, he's in his last year, so he has the authority with the team and the leadership position.
Coach, to that point, that just represents who you are, right? I mean, he's just he's kind of this year's example of who the hell Virginia basketball is, because that's kind of what you do. Isaiah Wilkins, right?
Yeah, I think every team has to have someone like that, every really good team. I mean, maybe there's some cases where it's not, but at least in the teams I've been a part of, there's always been someone that's been that guy, and you need that. And we actually, you know, Jack Salt has that identity. That's what is unique about this team. You know, the term synergy, the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. We have really good parts, and I think sometimes our guys don't get enough credit for their individual talent, but they've kind of meshed it together. And Isaiah, he's a great, whatever you want to say, ambassador or a representative of how we want to play. And we're not perfect, and we got a lot to keep going on, but up to this point, he's shown that. And I think people like you and people who understand the game are recognizing that more and more with him.
Yeah, I think Devin Hall has that same attribute for you.
For sure.
I mean, to me, those two guys are your pulse. It was interesting. I spent some time with them at ACC Media Day, and it was funny talking about Kyle and just saying that, you know, the man bun, without the man bun, is good because now he's one of us. In a lot of ways, which is interesting. Of, you know, just talking about his transition, but now you got this team that's so connected, has great trust. Everyone does what they do well, and now you're playing against a team that, you know, to me, is the most talented team in the country. In Duke,
of course.
As you look at it, so as you approach a game like this, how much you're going to be who you are, but what's the biggest challenge for you guys in a game like this?
If you don't mind, if I could go back, I was just thinking as you guys were talking, because I think it's an important point. Devin and, I'll say Jack because he's a captain, Saul, but Isaiah, it's like, and I've said this before in a company, they started out as, I don't know, entry-level employees or the sweeping the floors. They were red shirts. They were on the scout team. They didn't get a lot right away, and they've worked their way through the system, and now they're in a position of, you know, whatever you want to say, upper management. And I think that helps in terms of where the team is at. So I think that's a unique way, and that's harder in today's game to get because of transfers and all that. But I think that's a good, I don't know, analogy that I think of those guys a lot, and that's what I really appreciate, that they've stuck with it and have been patient. And they've gotten some rewards along the way, but that's a hard thing to get. But when you do, you certainly celebrate it. But to answer your other question, you said, what's the biggest thing? We're going to be who we are, but when we go into this game, that we need to address, what was the?
Yeah, obviously it's a daunt. I mean, they've got a special group. They have warts like everyone else, but like, what's the one thing? I say, you know, we got this. Is the one thing for sure that, you know, we've got to be able to do.
Well, I'm just watching them. I think they've ratcheted up their defense. They're getting back to how I think it was really impressive against Wake Forest. Their pressure, their overplay, they're playing with a level of tenacity. They have the offensive ability that is you know, in some ways breathtaking. You see the things they do, but now defensively and in that environment, I think, you know, you got to start, okay, offensively, you're going to have to be able to handle the pressure and have a level of sureness, you know, just to get into your offense. And, of course, you're going to have to play with an aggressiveness. So I think that is always something when you go into Cameron and even when they come to your place, when they're defending like that, can you handle that wave of intensity and that athleticism? And then, you know, defensively, it's not one thing, Seth. It's, of course, it's getting back and, you know, keeping them off of all those things. But it's just not yielding to the best of your abilities. No, they're going to make some plays, but can you win the majority of the possessions? And we always say it's not who's best or who has the most talented, who's the best team on that given day. And I think, you know, our guys are obviously hopeful for the challenge, looking forward to it, but also respect how talented and how good they are and what's before us.
You ever get mad?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
You see that in practice.
Hey, wait a second. That's a competitive dude we're talking to now.
I'm not saying you don't get frustrated, but, I mean, do you ever just get, like, just – like, I used to – your dad on the sidelines, you could he didn't – I don't know what he said, but you could see he was mad, man. You know what I mean?
Like, he was a volcano or the hurricane. He's just sitting there quiet, and then all of a sudden, bang.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, he almost he was Fran McCaffrey face before Fran McCaffrey. But you you seem to like you seem to handle whatever comes your way wherever it is in the same way. Would that be accurate? Externally, not internally.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think everybody battles with, you know, getting angry and all those things, but I'm thankful I got a little more of my mom's disposition than my father, so I give thanks to that. But I've learned, and absolutely, I lose my cool at times. It happens in practice. But I also know when I played and how it is, you know, you have to be intense. You have to, your guys, I see it, but if they can see, you know, that you have confidence in them or there's a poise and it's not the end of the world if things happen and get rough, I think over the long haul that can maybe relate to them. So I stay true to that, and I always try to keep the big picture in mind. There's a bigger thing going on, what real success is. Sometimes you have to remind yourself of that even in the heat of battle.
Right.
So that's easier said than done.
Well, to that point, you know, you go and you go into a league, and man, now you're the hunted. You've been since you've been there, and these fan bases aren't easy, right? Do you have to, before you go into, you know, you're going to go into Cameron, do you have to discuss with younger guys what playing in Cameron is, what the environment's going to be like? Don't react. Do you do that, or do you rely on the seniors to do that? How's that work for your program?
Yeah, the one thing is, I know they will do that. We were just talking about them before. You know, it's funny you say that. I haven't yet. We had a play Clemson, had a day off, so we'll have our practice today and tomorrow and leading up to this. And as you say that, it just dawned on me that we have a few guys who have never played there, and Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, Momedy, DeAndre Hunter, Nigel Johnson's actually, the majority of our guys haven't, with the exception of those three. So, yeah, that's probably a good idea. I wasn't thinking like that, but I think we will, and I think our players will talk to them. But, again, it still is about the game when the ball's tipped, and you're going to have to deal with that stuff. But yeah, I think it's a good reminder, but I don't think you make a mountain of it.
Yeah.
We used to bring guys in the night before and just say, we're not playing against any of those guys up there. You know, I mean, it's like there in Carolina, I mean, the banners are everywhere, and you just got to say, hey, Those guys are history. We're not playing against those guys. Let's worry about, you know, the guys we're playing against. And we're not playing against tradition. We're just playing against these players, which sometimes works. Sometimes we got blown out. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Speaking of your dad, all right, has, besides working on his golf game and trading the golf clubs,
yes.
How often do you bounce stuff off of him, and how hard is it for him to see what you're doing, yet to be obviously so proud of what you've been able to accomplish?
He's been a huge part of my basketball life and my life, and I love talking to him. You know, my father's going to be 75, and the older I get, I cherish those conversations. Sometimes he likes to talk about ball. Sometimes he'd just rather not, you know, because he gets a little worked up. He said, maybe I'll understand someday, but he's been great. You know, the things that I get from him, a lot of things, but he'll always caution me. He says he's like a watchdog, like, learn from the mistakes that I made. Don't, this is where I faltered, and you don't have to do that. And I think that's incredibly valuable when you can have someone who, you know, cares about you, is going to tell you the truth, share that stuff. And he'll, if occasionally he'll watch games after the fact, and boy, he lets me know that I don't sometimes have a clue of what I'm doing. And that's always good to hear too, I think. So, but I think that wisdom there. And then, you know, ultimately to know, hey, he wants to make sure I'm okay in this profession, because he said it's gotten the best of him at times, and it's gotten the best of all of us for sure. So I think that's incredibly valuable. But I wish he could enjoy it more, but he's a fiery Italian who's not wired like that right now.
I got a question. Could you ever see yourself coaching in the NBA? I think you got the perfect disposition to coach the NBA. That sounds crazy.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm fortunate enough, I played there for just the 3 years. It wasn't anything great, and only played about 15 minutes a game or whatever, but it was enjoyable to see the talent, but it is a different game. I don't know. I really don't. I can't answer that.
Yeah, sure.
The playoffs are exciting because you see those players, the world's greatest talent going after it, but it is a different animal for sure. I do enjoy seeing, you know, just Malcolm, and you didn't mention Mike Scott and those guys.
Yeah, Mike Scott,
guys,
sure, yeah.
So it's been fun to watch that take place, but I love the college game. I love, you know, maybe purity isn't the right word in today's day and age with what's happened, but there is more of a, there's different systems, different styles. I know our way is our way. And I know some people probably aren't a big fan of it, but that's okay. I think that's what makes the game great in college. And there's a camaraderie and a more of a, I don't know what the word is that, you know, is not present in the NBA. Those are good things there. And that's what I love. Terry Porter, who played for my dad, said, I cherish. He said, those days in college were the greatest ever. That's a 17-year vet. And other guys have said, it's just a unique experience that the pro, it becomes much more business-like at that level.
Sure. Well, Tony, thanks so much for being with us. And good luck this weekend. And hopefully we'll get a chance to see you pretty soon.
Okay, Dan. Okay, Seth. Thank you.
D squared. Virginia. Duke. Like if you look at like everything you compare, four-year guys, one and dones. One team's going to control the tempo of the game. The other team is obviously going to try to play a little bit faster. One team is, you know, really, really connected. The other team defensively, the other team has struggled at times. They're going to try to overwhelm you. What's your take on that game?
My take is this. I think Duke is the worst defensive team, although better lately, that I've seen since they had Jabari Parker. Like, I believe Jabari Parker is the worst. Before I saw Kyrie Irving, Jabari Parker was the worst really good college defender. And then I saw Kyrie Irving in the pros, and I'm like, wow, that's beyond bad. But anyway, I think they're back to playing Jabari Parker-type defense. So I think, even having said that, I think they're going to be able to get into the 70s, maybe the 80s at home, and I think that Duke's going to win the game. But I won't be surprised if Virginia wins. But I would like Duke at home. I'd almost like Duke at home against anybody because of the talent.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, how frustrated can Duke try to just overwhelm Virginia's mover blocker and their triangle stuff and their motion stuff with their athleticism and their length? But that means that Marvin Bagley's going to have to guard someone out on the perimeter, at least as a screener, and help him recover. And, you know, they have ways to spread you out. I think that's going to be interesting. You know, how long will Duke be disciplined defensively, even though, you know, because Duke's better when they can overwhelm you defensively,
right?
You know,
right.
They, you know, a little bit of what you would say at West Virginia. I mean, like if they can bully you, then that's one thing. If they can't bully you, it'll be interesting. And then, you know, just look, you're going to big double those. You know, whether it's Wendell Carter or Marvin Bagley, that's what Virginia does. Can they rebound out of that? That'll be interesting because you know that they're hard enough to rebound against as there is. They're the best offensive rebound team in the country. Duke, it'll be interesting to see if the Virginia could do that. Their guards are going to have to come and just stick their nose in, whether it's, you know, Devin Carter or DeAndre Hunter, who will probably have to play a lot in this game, Mamadou Diakite, because they have the athleticism and the length to come back and rebound. So it's going to be interesting, no doubt about it. How about the SEC Big 12 Challenge? Just like real quick, let's go through these games real quickly.
Yes.
South Carolina, Texas Tech, two teams a little bit looking in the mirror. South Carolina coming off two huge, you know, are a huge win at Florida. We both like Texas Tech. They've gone a little bit stale, but they had a good win against Oklahoma State at home the other day. Who do you like?
I like Texas Tech.
Even on the road?
Yeah, I kind of do. I think South Carolina really good. Again, I go back to what we said earlier. Is South Carolina's mentality now, hey, man, here we go. We're going now. You know, if it is, then they'll win the game. But if it's what normal college kids are doing, happy to win a couple, Texas Tech Bulldog, I like Texas Tech.
Yeah, you know, Chris Beard, these two guys obviously are connected to their teams. The teams play really hard for them. Texas Tech got stuck. The previous two games, they averaged 55 points a game. They couldn't score it at all. South Carolina's going to try to bully. I think the more South Carolina overplays because Texas Tech is used to that, I think they'll be able to handle that. I've been high on Texas Tech all season. I'm going to kind of lean with you. Florida Baylor, who do you like?
I like Florida. I like Florida. I there's something about Baylor I don't like. Not sure what it is. I think not having Ish Wainwright and doing all the little things has hurt them. But give me Florida coming off a loss. You know,
love off the loss. You love a little bit of a cause. Got their attention again. Playing against that zone, what do you think? I mean, you know, they play those four guards. They're a good passing team. Kulichev is a really good offensive rebound. Florida's got to win that game.
They got to win that game. They're good enough to beat anybody, and whatever's happened to them has happened to them, because when I had them in Portland, I thought they were going to be one of the top 10 teams in the country for the entire year. But make or miss, I guess, is what is up there. Chioza, good and bad. But I'll take Florida in this.
I'm going to skip one game. Georgia-Kansas State. I like this Kansas State team.
A lot.
I love Dean Wade. I love Barry Brown. I love how hard they played. And I was going to say, I love how hard Bruce has got them playing. Georgia, to me, is an enigma. They kind of tease you. They have a hard time winning a close game. Game at Kansas State. I got Kansas State winning that game.
Me too. I got Kansas State winning that game by double digits. They're a team that I legitimately feel is on a roll.
Yeah, I agree with you. How about Oklahoma, Alabama? You know, the battle of the guards, of the backcourts.
Whichever guard doesn't become a pig. How about that? Wow. Whichever guard doesn't, you know. Give me Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma has, they went through what, you know, again, they went through what teams, and Tony Bennett was talking about it, what teams got to go through. Are you going to learn from the Oklahoma State loss? Well, they did for one game against Kansas. I just think Oklahoma's a better basketball team, and I don't think you're going to get, I don't think you'll see again Trae Young stuck shooting bad shots and ignoring. I think that's over, and I think Oklahoma's going to profit from it, benefit from it.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma's just more skilled. Like, to me, Alabama plays young. I think they don't have the same skill level. They don't have the number of shot makers. Sexton coming off a tough game. He had that injury, so we'll move on. Tennessee, Iowa State. I like Tennessee. I like Tennessee's toughness. Although Iowa State, I'll tell you what, Steve Prohm does a great job with his team.
Great job.
I mean, they run it. They spread you out and drive you. At Iowa State, Hilton Magic, 7-3 at home. You still, who do you like?
Yeah, you know what? I'll say this, though. Iowa State had real chances in that Texas game, even though they got down early. They had some real chances, just couldn't quite get over the top. But give me the home team in this one. Yeah. Hilton Magic.
All right. Kansas, TCU can't afford to lose to Vanderbilt. They just came across a big win. Can't afford to lose it. Texas A&M, Kansas.
I don't like Texas A&M. Everybody likes Texas A&M. I like Texas A&M early in the year. I thought they were athletic. I don't like them. I think Kansas by 106.
106.
Yeah, 106.
Here's my thing on this. The front court of Texas A&M obviously is supposed to be good. They're only as good as their guards.
Yeah.
Like that. And their guard play is not going to be good enough. And then how are they going to guard that little lineup? And they've had too many issues. And then finally, we'll skip over Arkansas, Oklahoma State, although that could be an interesting game. I like Arkansas playing pretty well, senior guards. Kentucky, West Virginia, we kind of covered that. You like West Virginia at home, I would think.
I do. I do. I like West Virginia at home. I would like Kentucky at Kentucky. You know,
I thought you were going to say you like West Virginia because of their defense.
You don't get started on you guys. You guys in press Virginia.
I call it pressure Virginia because I think when they're scoring, then it's not the press that gets you. I think that when they're scoring, you're reacting to them a little bit and they push you out a little bit. If they're not scoring, I think like happened in the Kansas game, they struggled scoring and then all of a sudden – the spacing and people are driving them exactly what you said and getting where they want to go. So I think everything they do defensively is predicated on their offense, and they're not scoring. They're not a good defensive team. It's my first take for what it's worth. So you like West Virginia?
I do.
All right. I think we solved the world's problems today.
Seth, I think we did. We didn't even get into my Louisville take, but that's all
right. Whoa. By the way, that was goaltending. Offensive goaltending. Yeah. So it was ridiculous. So your Louisville take is that Dave Padgett, I would think, is doing a pretty good job.
No, I had a guy. I made people nuts. In fact, it's still going nuts here in Louisville by the news that I kind of, sort of, maybe almost broke about Louisville and the NCAA. I got a tip from a guy that, quote, in the room, said that Louisville is going to forfeit the national championship and have to give back around $15 million. Now, what I did say was, I was reading this yesterday on my show.
In the room where it happened?
You want me to read it to you?
That's from Hamilton, in the room when it happened. A little culture for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. this is from a guy that I trust, Dan, and I sent this to our bosses, and it blew up. I'm like the most hated. I got death threats last night.
Oh, my God. Again?
Again.
You and your family with death threats. You just can't have it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I got death threats from the Louisville people. But, hey, look, I'm still standing, at least from now, just wearing a little Kevlar. Let's go.
So are you going to read it or not?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Dan, you didn't hear this from me. This is from a guy I trust, a lawyer. But I have it from someone in the room, in quotes, that U of Louisville's appeal was denied today. This is 2 days ago. Not publicly released because the school gets 24 hours to prepare a statement. News may break during your show or, knowing Louisville, be pushed back. They'll try to figure it out. Forfeit national title, $15 million, et cetera. So I called the guy. I said, where'd you get this from? And when he told me who he got it from, I said, oh, boy. So that sounds
exactly
good.
Exactly like that, right? Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. That's going to be a problem for Louisville. So, yeah, I don't anticipate it being – I've talked to a lot of people before I read that on my show, which blew up, and I've talked to a lot of people since. The timeline, who knows, but that apparently is –
I don't think it's surprising. I mean, it was
no,
supposed to.
No, it's not.
They said it was going to come down. They lost their appeal.
Yeah, and they said they denied it. So we'll see what happens. But that was interesting. Yesterday, my life got threatened. Louisville radio was all over me. Obviously, when you, you know, the words that escape college basketball and college football fans are don't shoot the messenger. They seem to escape college football and college basketball fans. Don't shoot the messenger, people. Come on. Just because the mailman puts a bill in your mailbox doesn't mean he's the bad guy. He's just delivering the mail.
All right. Where are you going this weekend?
I am going to tonight. I'm going to go see Junior play against Penn State.
All right.
And then Saturday, it is the Fighting Buzz Williamses against Notre Dame at Notre Dame. I've got that game.
Ooh. All right.
Interesting.
All right. Yeah, that's an interesting game. I'm not sure that Notre Dame has enough ways to score.
At home?
At home, but you never know. You never know. All right, man. Well, hey.
Where are you going?
We are going to Morgantown.
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to go to Morgantown and a fish fry on Friday night with Hugs and Cal. That'll be interesting.
Throw my name around, see how it goes.
Yeah, and it's you know, big fundraiser for
yes,
Hugs Foundation in his mom's name.
Yes,
so that's pretty cool. And then I'm actually Sunday. I'm going to speak for the governor of West Virginia. There's a big 50-year-old basketball tournament, West Virginia and Beckley, and that he's always sponsored. So I'm going to be the lunchtime speaker for that, and then come home. There you go.
What are they paying you for that, big boy?
No, you know what? When the governor asks you,
yeah,
you do it. It's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Plus, I played in the Greenbrier Classic Pro-Am last year, and life was pretty good.
Hey, I knew there was someone who was being paid,
my friend. Invitation.
Hey, my name's Willie, not Silly. I know what we're doing.
I hear you, brother. You're the best.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.